This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Craig Lubow hosts guests Ami Freeberg, Kathy Baldwin-Heitman, and Theo Bunch. They will be discussing the Urban Grown Farms and Garden Tour. But first, I'm Naturally, and I have your environmental news. TheGuardian.com reports, activists occupied the Tate Modern's Turbine Hall overnight on Saturday in protest at the gallery's sponsorship by oil company BP. The 75 demonstrators from the Liberate Tate group, dressed in black with veils covering their faces, spent 25 hours scrawling words of warning about climate change and charcoal on the sloping floor of the hall. They refused to leave the building when it closed and were eventually allowed to stay overnight. They left at lunchtime on Sunday. We posted a video of their actions on our Eco Radio Facebook page. EcoWatch.com reports, the U.S. House of Representatives on Friday dealt a serious blow to President Obama's corporate-backed trade agenda while erecting a major stumbling block for proponents of Fast Track, or Trade Promotion Authority. After a tense showdown in multiple votes in the chamber, a final decision on Fast Track was ultimately deferred, affording a delay that critics say could further scuttle the trade authority. A bill on Trade Adjustment Assistance, or TAA, which would provide aid to workers displaced because of so-called, quote, free trade, unquote, agreements, had been packaged with Fast Track authority, and a vote against either doomed the total package. Legislators opposed to Fast Track had hoped to derail the entire package by voting against TAA. And derail it they did, voting 126 to 302 against TAA. Moments later, the chamber did pass a standalone version of Fast Track, but as the New York Times explains, because the Senate version linked TAA and Fast Track, the House vote, quote, would force the Senate to take up a trade bill all over again. And without trade adjustment assistance alongside it, passing trade promotion authority in the Senate would be highly doubtful, end quote. Instead, the House will reportedly take up TAA again next week. LATimes.com reports, a Santa Barbara County official has rejected a proposal by ExxonMobil to send a fleet of 6,720-gallon trucks on as many as 192 daily trips on US 101, while the pipeline the company normally uses is out of commission after last month's oil spill. Diane Black, Assistant Director of Planning and Development for Santa Barbara County, shot down the plan to use as many as 8 trucks per hour, 24 hours a day, to transport oil from an Exxon facility near El Capitan State Beach to refineries as far away as San Luis Obispo County. Crude oil typically moves from ExxonMobil's 3 offshore platforms through a 10.6-mile pipeline owned by Plains All American Pipeline. That pipeline ruptured May 19th and spilled as many as 101,000 gallons of crude oil along the Gaviota coast. Since then, Exxon has reduced its daily oil production by nearly two-thirds and stored its crude in tanks at Santa Ynez unit in Las Flores Canyon near US 101. The production of crude oil and natural gas would halt once storage space ran out, Exxon claimed in its application for an expedited emergency permit. In her rejection, Black noted that the evidence presented by Exxon, quote, does not support a finding that an emergency exists, end quote. The company cannot appeal the decision and would have to apply for a non-emergency permit. That process would take months, requiring environmental review and public hearings, Black said. And at this time, I'd like to turn the mic over to Mr. Craig Lubow.
Okay, thank you, Naturally. And our topic today is the Urban Grown Tour. My guests today are Ami Freeberg, Kathy Baldwin-Heitman, and Theo Bunch. Ami is the Communications and Outreach Manager for Cultivate KC. And Kathy is the principal of Kansas City Academy, a middle and high school. And Theo is the outdoor education instructor at the Gillis Center. Before we talk about the, welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
Before talking about the urban tour, let me just have each of you describe a little bit about your organization. I'll start with Ami Food Cultivate KC.
Sure. Thank you so much for having us here. Cultivate Kansas City is a nonprofit organization that we're working to grow food, grow farms, and grow community to create a healthier local food system all over the Kansas City metro area. So we manage a few urban farms. We're working to train new farmers and start new farm businesses. And then we're also working to grow community, get people engaged with their local food system. And that's really what this Urban Grown Tour is all about, is getting people out, exploring the farms and gardens that are all over our city, and then figuring out ways that they can get involved.
All right. And can you just tell us briefly what the, in your bio, you list New Roots for Refugees program?
Sure.
What is that?
New Roots for Refugees is one of the programs of Cultivate Kansas City, and it's actually a partnership with Cultivate KC and Catholic Charities of Northeast Kansas, where we're helping newly resettled refugees to Kansas City, Kansas. And actually, we're working with Kansas City, Missouri refugees as well at this point. It's a four-year training program where the farmers actually get their own land and get all of the training and skills that they need to, over those 4 years, figure out how to run their own small farm businesses right here in the Kansas City area. So after 4 years, those farmers will graduate off of our training farm and actually establish their own farm businesses on the land that they're purchasing. And you can see them at markets, farmers markets all over the city. Look for the New Roots for Refugees banners.
Okay. And going to Theo, if you can tell us a little bit about the Gillis Growth Grove, is that what it's called?
So the Gillis Growth Grove is a program we started about 3 years ago at the Gillis Center. And to really understand our outdoor education and farm program, it helps to kind of understand who we are, what Gillis is. And Gillis is kind of special, and that's one of the oldest nonprofits in Kansas City. So it's been around since the Civil War, where it started as a home for orphans and widows. And since then, it's kind of evolved where now we serve children and families throughout Kansas City and the surrounding areas. So we're kind of this hub that is reaching people just all over our city and pretty well into the countryside, to small towns all over. So we have about 40 boys that live on our campus in the Waldo area. We have an emergency shelter. We do extensive community outreach work and counseling. And so our garden program is really just kind of one of the tools that we use. And it's what, you know, my little niche, what I'm the most passionate about kind of there. But all the kids that live on campus, it really is their farm site. So they design it, they build it, they grow everything, and then they have the say on where the food goes. Our kids who come in for day treatment, we take the food that we grow, and then they take it out into the community and back to their families. So, and these are families that are living in some of the poorest areas of Kansas City, that are living in some of the, you know, the most prominent food deserts. And so, it's a really amazing community to kind of be part of.
And besides the what they're learning as far as the farming and that stuff, is it also having a therapeutic value for the kids?
It is. I don't think you can take a kid out to a garden without there being a therapeutic value. As soon as they get their hands in the soil and they start seeing kind of their larger place in this world, starting to understand other organisms and how ecosystems work, it's kind of amazing the transformation you see happen. I have kids that, I mean, they're all over the spectrum when it comes to different disorders and behavioral disabilities. And when they get out there, it's not just a place where they can sort of get an escape from school and from all of those things that are kind of on their little backs. But it's also a place where they can prove themselves, where we can take people out there and they can say, I grew this and I built this. And it's a way that they can kind of show the world and themselves who they are.
All right. And Kathy, can you tell us about the garden program that you're doing at your school?
Sure. Kansas City Academy's had a garden since 2007. We've started with just a couple of raised beds and now have progressed into, I think we have 15 and a small hoop house and compost and so on. Our garden program is primarily used to serve our school kitchen. We have a culinary arts program that was begun recently, and so we use the food for that primarily, along with other opportunities for students to learn about the gardening aspects. So we try to teach full circle, how it's grown, how do you plan the garden, and then how do you use it for nourishment. So we're really proud to be a part of this process the second time now, and the garden is a really integral part of our school program as well.
All right, and when you say part of the program the second time, you're referring being part of the urban tour for the second time?
Right.
Okay. And if we could just deal a little bit, if you can tell us what the urban tour is. I think it used to be called Urban Farm Tour, and then you changed the name?
Yeah, the event started out back in 2005, which was actually the first year that Cultivate Kansas City existed as an organization, and it was the Urban Farm Tour. There were six urban farms on the tour at the time, and it was really a way to promote those farm businesses, for them to invite their customers to come out and visit. And then as it evolved, there were more and more community gardens and school gardens and even some urban homesteads that wanted to be part of it. So it then became the Urban Farms and Gardens Tour. And now we're shortening that, calling it the Urban Grown Tour, to really encompass the farms, the gardens, and not necessarily have to say farms and gardens every time. So the Urban Grown Tour is really, it's a self-guided tour of, there's 30 sites on the tour this year. So these two with Gillis Center and Kansas City Academy, but there's, you know, some of the largest urban farms, Bad Seed, Herbivore Farm, the Gibbs Road Farm, the Juniper Gardens Training Farm, which is home of that New Roots for Refugees program, down to the Westport Post Office, which is just a small integration of edible landscaping into the area around the post office, so that people in the neighborhood can, or that are coming and going from the post office, can pick food as they're coming and going. So we're really just trying to showcase that diversity of food that's growing in the city, and that, and ways people are engaging with that, and then create the opportunity, because it's hard for someone to call up a farm and say, hey, can I come visit? Farmers are busy. They don't necessarily want to stop what they're doing and entertain people every day. So this event is really that way for people to get out and see the amazing stuff that's growing in our city.
And how do the farmers get involved in this, to be part of the tour?
The event has evolved over the years. It keeps growing, and people hear about it, they know about it, they'll reach out to us and say, I want to be on the tour. We'll send out an email to the listservs and all the different groups of farmers and gardeners around the city, usually in the fall. We try to get out, do the application process in the fall. So especially for new sites, we can see what they actually look like. If we wait until December or January, we don't really get a good picture of what's going on at the site. So every late summer, early fall, we'll put out a call for applications, and then review those and visit the sites and narrow it down to a good group.
And how does this compare, or how is it different or the same as a co-op would be, like a farm co-op?
A farm co-op. It's very different. This is an event really designed to get people out on the farms. A farm co-op, are you thinking like a CSA or...
Right, where the farmers are part of an organization.
These farmers and gardeners, some of them are affiliated with Cultivate KC, others are not. People doing their own thing at their schools. But it's really just trying to get exposure and awareness to the greater Kansas City community about the different projects related to food and farming that are going on all over the city. So some of them are more directly affiliated with Cultivate Kansas City, in the sense like New Roots for Refugees and the Gibbs Road Farm and the Cultivate KC's Food Forest, that we actually run those programs. But most of the farms and gardens on the tour are just our friends, you know, people that are out doing their thing in the community. And we really think it all of the work that's going on around food and gardening and farming in the city is really worth showing off.
And when people come on these tours, is there any type of an educational component when they go to each of the farms?
Yes, absolutely. Education is a big part of this event. And so it's going to look different on each site, because each site really specializes in different things. Some people will learn more about the community engagement aspect. Some people will ask questions about what insect is on that plant, and we'll learn in that way. So it's a customized experience to each person, what they want to get out of it. If they want ideas for their home garden, they can ask questions about that. But all the farmers and gardeners that are participating are there because they want to share their knowledge, they want to share their expertise, and really and get people excited about it.
All right. And going on the Gillis Center, how did you get involved in the Urban Farms Tour? Or Urban Growth Tour.
Well, I think like anybody, when you're passionate about something, the first thing you do is you find those people that share your passion. Cultivate is one of the biggest names when it comes to farming and gardening in the Kansas City area, and they're one of the biggest advocates for urban farming. So it was pretty quick, I think, that I started kind of looking into that and seeing what it's about. And that's one of the beautiful things about really, when you're talking about urban farming in Kansas City, each farm site you see is going to be as individual as the person that makes it. It's like an artist with their masterpiece, but at the same time, it is a very close-knit community. Most of the farmers, they know each other, they hang out together, they go to each other's farm sites. And that's part of why it's so important, I think, to have it at places like Gillis, because this is a world that I can introduce my kids to, where they can find community and they can go to places like Cultivate Kansas City. And if this is something that they enjoy, I mean, that's careers, that's a life, that's jobs, that's helping change the world around you. And that's something Cultivate does in a big, big way.
Okay. And when you got started doing this, did you have a background in farming before you went to Gillis?
I did. I grew up on a sheep farm in the Flint Hills of Kansas. So I grew up farming. I came to Kansas City actually to go to the Art Institute, and then but when farming's kind of in all of our bones. It doesn't matter what part of the world you're from. It's how humanity has existed for. I mean, it was the birth of culture, really, as we know it. And so when I came to Kansas City, I mean, I felt disconnected. I felt kind of depressed, and it was really through farming that I kind of found myself again. You know, it's kind of, you could take the farm boy off the farm, I guess. So I just kind of brought the farm with me.
All right. And before we go to Kathy, I do want to give out, after we take our break in a little bit, we will take phone calls. So if you want to call in with a question and comment after our break, the studio number is 816-931-5534. That's 931-5534. All right, Kathy, can you tell us a little bit more about the garden, that your place and how you got involved then in the urban tour?
I think the first time that we got involved with Cultivate was when we took students to their site many years ago, long before the community in Kansas City was as fully grown as it is today. And we just went simply to just learn about, you know, what the different plants were and what the different pests were and how people were going about becoming educated. We were really young in the process then and still feel pretty young now. But one of the things that was really incredible, we talked about education before, is that the community in Kansas City, it's, you know, this tour isn't about the showcasing of beautiful, perfect gardens. It's about us sharing knowledge about what's hard and what are the things that we're grappling with, what did we learn this season, that kind of thing. And so when we became involved, it was really because we're an educational institution and this was an extension of that mission. For us, we started thinking about food in our school. We didn't have a lunch program in our school, and so we had these really awful vending machines, and some students said, you know, we need to do something about this. And so it was about the same time that we decided to have a healthier lunch program that the garden just naturally became kind of a next step. And so that was really why we started, was because we wanted to feed our kids better food, and that's been a terrific improvement to our school culture.
All right, and we do need to take a break, and we will be back momentarily.
David Corton.
We have a capacity far beyond that of any other species to choose our future. We each thereby hold a commensurate responsibility to all within our means to bring our species into alignment with creation's deep purpose. We're the ones we've been waiting for.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
Kansas City City Council just adopted a new $1.5 billion budget for the next year. The budget is Kansas City's blueprint for what's important to voters, but how does the council figure that out? City Council member and Finance Committee Chair Jan Markison explains how the council did it in the next All Souls Forum, Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
Healthy trees, healthy streams. On this CurrentCast. A review of more than 200 studies about streams led Byrne Sweeney of the Stroud Water Research Center in Pennsylvania to this conclusion.
If we had 100 feet of forest on either side of any given stream, we would be able to put that stream in a much better condition to support wildlife, to be swimmable, to be fishable, but also to provide the ecosystem services that we desperately need.
Sweeney says trees help capture runoff and provide shade and food for aquatic animals, improving the health of the stream. As a result, the stream is better able to process fertilizers, toxins, and other pollutants, providing a cleaner, healthier water supply. Support for CurrentCast comes from the Mitsubishi Corporation Foundation for the Americas. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, this is Craig Lubow. For those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to Eco Radio, and our topic today is the Urban Grown Tour, which is a tour of some organic farms and gardens in the area, coming up June 24th through June 28th. And my guest is Ami Freeberg. She's a communication outreach manager at Cultivate KC. Kathy Baldwin-Heitman, she is the principal of the Kansas City Academy, which is a middle and high school, and they have a garden there that she's been talking about. And Theo Bunch, who is from the Gillis Center, he is the outdoor education instructor, and they have a garden project, farm project that the kids at the Gillis Center work on. Welcome back. Again, for those of you who have any calls or comments or questions, you can call us at 816-931-5534. All right. Kathy, first of all, to clarify, KC Academy, is that a private school or a charter school?
Kansas City Academy is an independent private school. It's out in Waldo as well, 79th and Main. We're kind of a super small school, typically around 50 to 75 middle and high school students who come from all over the Kansas City area.
Right. And do all of the students work on the farm project?
Or? No, they don't. It's by choice. And typically those that are either more interested in the sciences or those who want to work out or those who are interested in culinary. Those are typically the three. Although we've had also several art students who've been interested in some of the sculpture and some of the planning parts of the garden as well. So it appeals to most everyone there. Everyone is pleased that it's there. Not everyone is willing to get as dirty as some of us like to get.
Okay. And is that located on the school campus?
It is. It's on the south side of the campus. Okay. Just in the parking lot, it used to be an old volleyball pit from, 30 years ago. And we just put the raised beds on there. So it's all raised beds and one small hoop house.
All right. And Theo, with the Gillis Center, is that also located on the grounds of Gillis Center?
It is. We are, so our farm kind of wraps around our day treatment school. So it's right there on Warnell Road, 8150 Warnell Road.
And that many kids from the Gillis Center are participating in that project?
Well, on campus at any one time, we can have on the upward numbers of 200 kids if you combine our emergency shelter, our residential program, and then our day treatment program. And our day treatment program is expanding. I'd say on a given week, we usually have around participation of about 60 children. Once again, it is by choice. It's kind of hard to teach a kid if the kid doesn't want to be there. So a big part of my job is making it as attractive and interesting as possible so that they want to. And in that, like Kathy said, it's amazing how many different ways a person can get interested in a garden site. They're very multi-purpose places. So with our residential program, the problem really isn't getting them interested in being out there. It's finding enough time to get them all out there the amount that they want to be. I mean, they would, the boys, when you build something attractive, when you build something interesting, and when they're building it themselves, when it's theirs, it's really, it's not a place you really want to leave.
All right. And to be on the urban grown tour, are all of these farms that are involved organic farming?
We don't require organic certification by any means, and to really use the word organic, you technically need that USDA certification. A lot of the participating sites are small farm, like small school gardens or community gardens, and they're not going to have that organic certification. However, pretty much all of them are using organic practices. They're just not certified and not going to be certified through that practice. But they're using, you know, all the environmentally friendly practices of, compost and no chemical fertilizers or pesticides.
All right. And at the Kansas City Academy and at Gillis, is there like a companion class that the students can take relating to the farming so they're learning about it from that aspect besides participating?
At Kansas City Academy, we've done that a couple of ways. On occasion, we've incorporated it specifically with a class, but it seems like it makes more sense and is a little easier for us when we have the participation when a particular need arises. It's sometimes more difficult for a teacher to create a lesson plan that's going to last for a full semester, for example, in the garden. Not that you couldn't keep folks busy that whole time, but it doesn't work as well as saying, here's a 3-day project, or we need to work on Saturday this week, or, you know, those kinds of things are a little bit easier for us than matching it to a specific class.
All right. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, if you could just state your first name and where you're calling from.
Blind guy from the Villa Incognito here in Midtown, KC. Fascinating show. In the past, I've tried to get the station to do PSAs like today's farmer markets are at, and remind people daily so they can start eating healthier, then they could have more money to give to the station. But anyway, on your edible landscape at the Westport Post Office, do you know what they have planted there?
This is Ami. I don't know the specifics of what's planted there. The woman that's in charge of that and taking that project on is named Glenn Stewart. And yeah. I would just say stop by during the Urban Grown Tour or any time and ask her about what they have going on there. But
I've tried to get a lot of people to replace their landscaping with edible landscape. I said, hell, it'd even be good for the wildlife. But we should all work on the Nelson to put edible landscaping in there because the Eulata sprays is around the Henry Moore Sculpture Garden so you aren't bit by a bug or anything. And somebody objected, said, yeah, but the birds might defecate on the sculptures. I said, Jesus Christ, they're outdoor sculptures. That poop may help the patina. Hey, peace out.
All right, thank you, caller. Ami, one of the things I wanted to ask you, there's a new thing, I believe, relating to what's called the Food Forest Project.
Yeah.
What is that?
Good question. So back in 2011, Daniel Dermitzel, who was a co-founder of Cultivate KC, an associate director for many years, got a small grant to do some experimenting with permaculture food forests. So he, as part of this grant, rather than just doing theoretical research and reading and teaching a workshop, he actually went about designing and planting a food forest. So it's been growing now for 4 years, since 2011 when it was first planted. And finally is looking like a real forest of some sorts. So it's over in Merriam, Kansas, on about a quarter acre of land that's owned by a longtime volunteer and supporter of Cultivate KC that they've let us use for this project. And this is the first real public showcase of that space. And so it's integrating fruit trees and nut trees and perennial herbs and berries and all kinds of native fruits into this site. And it's a really I haven't been over there even this season, so I'm excited to see what it looks like, and think it's a really neat opportunity for Kansas City to start thinking more than just your growing vegetables, but how can we integrate this whole permanent system of agriculture into our parks and our cities. And so the food forest is a really great place to see that. And we're actually really lucky to have the author of Food Not Lawns, that Steve Mann with the Kansas City Food Not Lawns chapter is actually bringing here during the tour. And she's going to be teaching a workshop at the food forest on Saturday and then leading a guided tour of the food forest. So that'll be a really great opportunity to see that.
And who is that's coming?
Heather Jo Flores is the author of Food Not Lawns kind of started a movement of replacing our lawns with food.
All right. And we have a caller? Okay. Caller, could you state your first name and where you're calling from?
Well, my name is Gary, and I'm calling from Independence. I was actually calling I'm sure I've got a comment for whatever you're talking about. I just tuned in, and I was wondering where the Spanish is. Usually Monday night is Spanish, right?
No, 6 to 7 on Mondays is Eco Radio.
It's Thank Eco you. Radio, what, right. till 7 or something?
Right.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Right.
Okay. Now this forest, that'll be on the tour.
It will be, yeah.
Okay. Is that the same, I'm not sure if I heard you say the term, is it the same as permaculture farming?
Yeah, it's an example. It's permaculture, I think, is a little bit broader concept than this food forest, which is a demonstration of permaculture principles.
All right. And when we were talking about one of the things, I don't think we finished as far as we talked about whether or not you have a class.
Oh, yes.
Companion class.
So with Gillis, I mean, we teach kids all the way from K to 12. And like I said, we have a whole host our children are an incredibly diverse bunch. And so there's the spectrum of mental and behavioral disabilities. I have kids that are amazingly intelligent, are amazingly curious. But because of past abuse, trauma, the fact they've been bounced around the system like a ping pong ball, they just never were really able to thrive in a regular school environment. And so we've been experimenting a lot with ways to re-engage them in learning to make the sciences interesting. And the Outdoor Education Center is a big part of that because it doesn't feel like school. You go out there and you're not sitting in a classroom at your desk being told not to fidget, get ready to turn to page 12, there's a test coming. Out there you're exploring real ecosystems and organisms. And it just makes things not only more interesting, but it unabstracts them. I'm a huge fan of reading. I mean, reading is amazing, but it is an abstraction of things. They're symbols that represent what's out there in the world. Well, we're combining that with that hands-on approach. And so we've had some very good beginning results with it, and now it's just kind of pushing it to the next level. Part of that is we're building learning stations devoted to a lot of the different earth sciences. We're kind of collecting the ologies. We got a dendrology station we're developing, which is a study of trees, entomology, ecology, microbiology, meteorology, astronomy, and then we also are delving into a business and economics curriculum that's tied into our farm site, and that's something we're just starting to kick off, but the kids are pretty excited about because it's their little micro business.
All right. You know? And just wondering, too, have there been any studies or statistics gathered as far as the impact for the kids that participate in this, if they progress in the other programs and are able to mainstream back to regular schools faster than the kids who do not participate in this type of project?
There's a lot of studies. There are from all over the world, and I mean, there's a huge body of knowledge. We are doing it. Gillis is committed to it because that body of knowledge exists. And right now, we're working a lot on our own case studies. So, I mean, you got to remember, every community is unique. And so, how best can we help the kids at Gillis? I mean, we're trying out things as we go, but. There's kind of a wealth of knowledge on it. When it comes to the therapy, I mean, and we're talking about a lot of different things. So if you're talking about improvements when it comes to test scores and how they're doing in the school and school engagement, or if you're talking about the therapeutic side of it, when it comes to green and outdoor kind of therapies, there are a lot of studies. There's quite a few with autism and showing that there's great improvement when it comes to their ability to kind of connect and be able to express. And then there's, it's just, it really depends on the population. But yeah, I mean, the numbers are good.
All right. And so we mentioned before there's 30 farms on the tour. And for people who don't have your catalog yet, what would be the website they can go to see what the 30 farms are?
Yeah, so all of the information about the Urban Grown Tour is available at cultivatekc.org/urban-grown-tour. If you just get to cultivatekc.org, you'll find all the information as well. So we have a list of all the farms and gardens, details about the event, as well as a link to an interactive map that we had donated the creation of. So that's a really fun way to look at the city and start clicking around and seeing what's on the tour and what activities they'll have going on at the different sites throughout the weekend.
All right. And so on, you've got the Urban Grown Tour itself, which is June 27th to 28th. And what are the other events then leading up to that between 24th and the 27th?
Sure. So the tour is the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th. But we'll kick events off on Wednesday, the 24th. We've had a great partnership with the Kansas City Public Library for many, many years. And so we always host a kickoff event for the tour at the library. And this year, we're celebrating 10 years of growth as an organization. So we're taking that opportunity to reflect on the last 10 years and see how things have changed, what's grown, what's different, and then also look forward to the next 10 years. What can we create together in the next 10 years? So we're really excited about that. It'll be a panel discussion with some of the leaders in our community in the local food system. Have some great catering from some of our local chefs that always use local produce. So it's a really great great way to start getting excited about the events. Then we also have Eat Out Local, which is an opportunity. We have 9 different restaurants that have agreed to prepare a special meal for the evening or for the day, featuring locally grown produce, and then they're going to donate 10% of the proceeds to support our work, growing food, growing farms, and growing community. So that's Eat Out Local on the Thursday, the 25th. And then we have Friday off, but actually I mentioned Heather Jo Flores and Food Not Lawns. They have some events going on Thursday and Friday, as well as being part of the tour on Saturday. So I don't have all the details of that event in my head, but that's going on Friday. And then we have the tour. And like I said, we're celebrating 10 years. So we're throwing a birthday party. And that will be Saturday the 27th, that evening after you've visited farms. Come have a picnic in the field of Westport Middle School. And that's a great way to connect with this community of people, of growers, and people that really care about our local food community.
All right. And you list several workshops in the catalog. Are those being conducted at the farms themselves?
Yes. So that's something we've done a little bit differently this year. On previous tours, we've pulled workshops out and done them in advance of the tour. But we really want to get people out onto the farms. And a workshop is so much more relevant if you're actually seeing the chicken coop that they're talking about building or watching the beehive rather than sitting in a room somewhere. So we've farmers and gardeners have kind of self-selected topics that they're really passionate about and knowledgeable about. And we'll be hosting workshops on their different farms and gardens throughout the weekend. So also available at cultivatekc.org is that full list of workshops throughout the weekend. And that goes back to the education piece of really getting people excited, not just to get involved, but then giving them some tools on how to really grow some food and do this stuff.
All right. And for those of you who are just joining us, again, you are listening to Eco Radio. Our topic is the Urban Grown Tour, which is a tour of the farms and gardens in the area that do primarily organic farming. And my guest is Ami Freeberg, Kathy Baldwin-Heitman, Theo Bench. Ami is the Communications and Outreach Manager at Cultivate KC. Kathy is the principal of the Kansas City Academy, which is a middle and high school, and Theo is from the Gillis Center. And we do have to take our next break, and we will be back momentarily.
Van Jones.
I want to suggest to you that we have a problem that we can solve. And in solving it, we will not only rescue and redeem the project of this Green Revolution, but we can rescue and redeem the country as a whole and help to save the whole earth.
Bioneers, Friday morning at 9:30.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
Global warming has been described as putting weather on steroids, and in Australia, we are a country of extreme weather.
That's John Connor, CEO of the Climate Institute, an Australian think tank. He says that by intensifying Australia's already extreme weather, climate change is threatening the viability of its sports, such as soccer, cricket, and tennis.
But perhaps the most dramatic was the Australian Tennis Open of last year, where we actually had players passing out from the heat.
To better adapt to conditions like extreme heat and flooding, many Australian sports organizations are updating their facilities. For example, new elite venues often include costly adaptations, such as retractable roofs and raised flooring. But many amateur clubs and community facilities are struggling to compensate. So Connor hopes temperature rules will be put in place to help protect the safety of all athletes who are exposed to the elements.
Local administrators have very often volunteers and very rarely have the skills or training to be able to implement when to call time out if the heat's getting too much.
As the climate continues to warm, such precautions will become increasingly important for athletes, not only in Australia, but around the world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, this is Craig Lubo, and thank you for listening. This is Eco Radio again. And I believe there's a term that I saw in here, edible landscapes. Can you tell us what that is?
Sure. Well, when you think about landscaping, most people think about flowers, native grasses, things that are pretty, but food is beautiful too. So why not take the resources that you're putting into creating a beautiful space and make it edible and functional as well? So, I mean, that's the basic concept of edible landscaping, but creating a functional design that also can feed people because everybody eats. So,
and Kathy, I think you said that your garden is primarily to supply the food for the students.
Right, for our lunch program. We've had a lot of different styles, I'll say, of gardens. When we first began, we were really focused on trying to make sure that we could demonstrate a variety for students. Somebody maybe never seen a turnip or something. And so we were focused on variety. Over the years, as the culinary program and the healthy lunch program began to take off, we started really understanding like how to plan for volume of eating. And so now primarily we have herbs and greens, and because those are the things that are the most expensive for our kitchen to purchase. So we work with the culinary students and the chef at the school to identify, you know, what are the things that we most need in there. So we don't have huge variety like some gardens might have. We do try to make the particular types of food interesting. So it might be a variety that someone hasn't used before, just something more, a different color of a vegetable that maybe somebody didn't know that beets could look like that or that carrots could look like that. But so I think what people will find on the tour is that people decide what to plan in their gardens based on what their particular needs are, and it changes over time for sure. And I think the other thing I would say that folks will notice is that each of us, we're working on different aspects of the garden. So now we know a little bit more about planning, more about the growing season. But for example, in our world, watering has been a really big issue. And so this year, finally, with a small grant, we're able to be totally off of the of the city water system now. We were able to get a large catchment system. So when people come to our garden this summer, in the next couple of weeks, that'll be something we can talk to them about as well. Is, you know, some people might be talking about soil or composting or pest control or whatever. For us, the big thing this year is water catchment and how to. We had rain barrels, but it wasn't enough, and we couldn't get it from point A to point B very easily. So now we have that, and so there's different things people will learn.
And catchment is at this a large scale version of rain barrels, or
yes, I would say so. Okay. We had a couple of rain barrels, a typical size that people might be used to in a residential situation, but now we have these huge totes, six great big totes that I think house around 15,000 gallons of water, and a solar pump and system that now allows us to just water from that. So that's the kind of thing. Others may be working with different issues, but that was a big one for us.
Okay. And will you be teaching any of the workshops at
Won't be teaching. I hope to go to some of them. When people come to our site, we will be doing a few things. We'll be talking about the water catchment. We'll be talking about our culinary process, what we do for the culinary students. And for a children's activity, they'll be making little seed bombs. They'll be making a way. They'll be creating ways to help plant flowers for the bees. So it'll be an interesting thing. And each site will offer some little something different. So people should go to a lot of them.
All right. And Theo, what will be unique offered at your site?
At our site? Well, there's a lot that we have going on out there. I mean, if you're working with a bunch of kids and you're involving them in the design and the creative process, you just end up going a whole lot of different directions. One thing is the incorporation of art into our site. We have murals. We have kids' art pieces all over. The other thing is, thanks to the big generosity from a company called Duracom, we have a working wind turbine and solar panel system that charges all of our lawn care equipment. So all of our electrical needs are completely off-grid. We also have a traveling market cart that we've been building and designing with the boys that also will be run on solar panels and is off-grid. So anybody who's interested in the teeny home movement or how they can kind of go the next step when it comes to markets, we have designs, and that is all going to be open-sourced. So if they like it and they're interested in it, that is information that we are willing to – I mean, they can have it all, the blueprints, you name it. And then, of course, there's the different learning stations we've been developing. We also do companion planting – primarily, so a lot of kind of the different symbiotic relationships between different plants, and then we have all of that info available too. So my boys will be doing the tours; they'll be showing it off. It's their hard work, so they'll all be right. The ones kind of letting everybody know what it's all about.
Okay, and Ami, besides we've talked about two of the tours here. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you'd want to say about some of the other tours that are included?
I think we have 30 farms and gardens, so we can't talk about each of them, but every site, like you can hear, each farm, each garden has its unique story, unique kind of expertise and passion, and so all of them are worth a trip to really see the diversity. And on our website, cultivatekc.org, we have the descriptions of the sites as well as a section called Explore. And so we've tried to kind of pull out some of those highlights of each of the sites so people can have an idea if they're really interested in beekeeping. These might be some of the sites to visit, or native plants, visit these sites. So through that map on our website, it's a great way to start thinking about how you want to approach the tour. And it's what you want to get out of it. And so there's so many different options.
And all the information that's in this program book, is that on the website?
It is, yes. All of the information about the tour, about all the sites, is at cultivatekc.org.
If somebody wants to pick up one of these books, is there some place they can pick it up before the tour?
Sure. We have a tour guidebook. A great place to get it would be at the kickoff event on Wednesday, the 24th of June. Also, the Gibbs Road Farm is a program of Cultivate Kansas City, and they sell at the Brookside Farmers Market every Saturday. So they'll have booklets available there, as well as a variety of different events that will be set up at. Can't list them all, but
do any of your farms participate in go to the city market too?
Some of the farmers in the New Roots for Refugees program sell at the city market, and then Herbivore Farm also sells on Saturdays at City Market. Those ones, I think, are the only ones on the tour.
All right. Okay. For those just joining us, you've been listening to Eco Radio, and we were talking about the Urban Grown Tour. And if you want more information, you can let me have you say the website one more time.
Sure. CultivateKC.org, as well as social media at CultivateKC.
All right. And thank you all for joining us. And Natural E, we'll have the calendar coming up.
Thanks, Craig. Heather Flores, author of Food Not Lawns, How to Turn Your Lawn into a Garden and Your Neighborhood into a Community, and Food Not Lawns Kansas City together are offering an urban permaculture primer in the form of a three-day workshop, June 25th through 27th. In the first session, you will learn urban permaculture design principles to turn your yard into a garden and your neighborhood into a community. The second session is a hands-on experience, eradicating a lawn and replacing it with an edible landscape. In session three, you will explore the urban food forest design for sustainable food production, followed by a guided tour of the five-year-old Cultivate Kansas City Food Forest. Scholarships are available if you contact Steve at prairietrading.com, and please see our Eco Radio KC Facebook page for an invite to this event. And as we were discussing on tonight's show, the Urban Grown Tour, Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday and noon to 5 on Sunday. Explore urban farms and gardens and discover what's growing in Kansas City. This self-guided tour is your chance to visit the people who are changing the way our city eats. More information on this event can be found on our Eco Radio KC Facebook page or by visiting cultivatekc.org/urbangrowntour. And finally, volunteer at Boulevardia at Bridging the Gaps Recycling Stations. This is their biggest volunteer need is Saturday's third shift starting at 7 p.m. There will be bands playing, and in the evening, the sun will be going down, so it's not so hot. You'll get a free T-shirt, free general admission ticket on the day you volunteer, plus an additional general admission ticket. You can learn more at bridgingthegap.org/BLVDIA. And that's all for the events this week.
When we think about the environmental movement today, we might have preconceived notions it's about saving whales or protecting spotted owls or cleaning up polluted rivers.
What we don't expect to think about? Thomas Jefferson, the Constitution, fairness. But according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., that's precisely where the conversation needs to go to have a sustainable future on the planet.
We met with the longtime environmental attorney and president of Waterkeeper Alliance at the organization's annual meeting in Boulder, Colorado, to talk about the environment, democracy, and why the two are indivisible.
The best measure of how a democracy functions is how it distributes the goods of the land, how it distributes the commons, those assets, the air, the water, the wildlife, the fisheries, the public lands, the aquifers, the beaches, the shorelines, the rivers, those assets that cannot be reduced to private property ownership, but by their nature are owned by the whole community. And the function of the government is to allocate, to make sure that everybody gets to use those resources. Nobody can use more than their share. Nobody can privatize those resources and turn them into private profit. Everybody, whether you're black or white, rich or poor, humble or noble, everybody should be able to go down to their local river, pull out a fish, and bring it home and feed it to their family. And the big battle that you see in a democracy is our efforts by powerful private entities within a society to privatize the public trust, to steal the air by polluting it, to steal the water and fisheries by dumping their waste into our rivers and streams. And what a democracy, one of the principal functions of democracy is to make sure that those assets stay in the hands of all of the public. And today, as you see huge concentrations and aggregations in the energy sector and the agricultural sector, which are the biggest polluting sectors, and in pharmaceutical, of course, you also see those same aggregations of power occurring in our political system. You know, one of the reasons Thomas Jefferson was fixated on keeping America an agricultural economy is because he thought that the only way to preserve democracy is if you had tens of thousands of yeoman farmers, each with a stake in our political process, who were also the backbone of the economy, that that you would have a democracy that was fully functioning. In other words, he felt that we had to create a middle class at the major producers in the society had to be spread, had to be diverse, and they had to be spread across a large and pluralistic base. And, you know, democracy and human rights and civil rights and all the values that we cherish as a nation and that are embodied in our Constitution are tied up in the way that we allocate the resources of the environment.
Has the environmental justice movement always been important to Waterkeeper Alliance?
From the beginning. In fact, my first case for the Hudson Riverkeeper was a case in which the co-plaintiff was the NAACP. And it was a case involving the construction of a highway, the proposed construction of a highway on the Hudson River that would have been on pilings out of the river, and then it would have come to shore in a community in Ossining, New York, that was one of the oldest black communities north of the Mason-Dixon line. It was really an extraordinary community and a cohesive community, but it was picked to come ashore there because these were people who didn't have the political power. And, you know, throughout my career as an environmental attorney, I've found that story again and again. 4 out of every 5 toxic waste dumps in America is in a black neighborhood. You know, where does the landfill go, and where does the sewage treatment plant go, and where do we put these obnoxious facilities? Well, the fact is that we're putting them in the poorest neighborhoods, and we're putting them in the neighborhoods where people have no political power.
What do you view right now as the major upcoming issues as far as the Alliance is concerned and just at water in general?
Well, the primary issue is always intertwined with the way we use energy. You know, we find the agriculture and energy are two kind of big issues. And the agriculture, we target primarily the industrialization of agriculture and factory farming and meat. And then on the energy side, we target carbon. What we do essentially is we try to force the carbon incumbents to internalize the cost of their energy production, much of which lands in the water, whether it's mercury or acid rain or the other, or carbon. It's going to impact the waterways. It's going to aggravate global warming. It's going to aggravate the acidification of the ocean, the acidification of lakes and high altitude forests, and of course, mercury contamination. According to the National Academy of Sciences, there's now dangerous levels of mercury in every freshwater fish in America. We know about the mercury contamination in the saltwater species, but we're living in a science fiction nightmare today where my children and the children of most Americans can now no longer engage in the seminal primal activity of American youth, which is to go fishing with their father or mother in the local fishing hole and then come home and safely eat the fish. So it's been a continuing theme of of my career, and it's been one of the kind of founding tenets of Waterkeeper Alliance that protecting the environment is about protecting democracy, about protecting notions of justice and fairness and equality and human rights and civil rights, and all those things are wrapped up into one package.
We've been speaking with Robert F. Kennedy Jr., environmental attorney and president of Waterkeeper Alliance. To learn more about Waterkeeper Alliance, visit waterkeeper.org. To hear upcoming interviews with Waterkeeper members, visit our website at h2oradio.org.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.